Into another episode of the DAF on Draft podcast. In today's episode, Dalton is actually picking up his wife from the airport, so he cannot record. Again, Dalton is back in America, figuring out his visa situation. He's been away from his family, so it's a good moment for him to reunite with his family, pick them up from the airport, who have been in Portugal for a while. So Dalton is not on tonight, but in a bit of a throwback fashion, Devin Jackson has returned to the DAF on Draft podcast. And again, it's always a good time to have Devin on. Last time Devin joined, we broke down some linebacker play over the summer and our what to watch when scouting exposition. And Devin joined me to talk about some linebacker play. So Devin's going to hop back on here and join me to talk about this week 14 slate, this rivalry weekend, Thanksgiving weekend slate, loaded Friday, loaded Saturday. And we're going to talk about some college football playoff implications as well, how the bracket currently stands and how this is going to play out. But Devin, welcome back to the pod. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. Excited to be back on with you, Corey, and chop it up. You know, last time we talked, we were just kind of diving into this 2025 class. Now, picture is starting to get a little bit clearer for some prospects, other positions, not so much. Speaking about the quarterback class, of course, but excited for this time of year. It's always a good time of year to be able to chat up, you know, some of the early, you know, rankings and early previews of all the positions. And as we start to wind down the season, you know, NFL fans are starting to look forward to who they're going to draft in April.
Yeah, it's the best time of the year. I mean, we have been talking off air. It's time to start planning the Shrine Bowl, the Senior Bowl, the Combine, really some of the most enjoyable networking opportunities that I've ever had the chance to be a part of the Combine the past 2 years. I went to the Senior Bowl 4 years ago now, but you know, try to get to the Senior Bowl and Shrine, one of the two at least this year, and then obviously the Combine, but always a good time. But not to get ahead of ourselves too much here, we're going to talk about, as we do every Friday episode, this week 14 slate. And it is rivalry weekend, but boy, some of these matchups do not boast a lot of head-to-heads between 2025 NFL draft prospects. So we're going to do our best to get through this. But most of this episode might be spent talking about the college football playoffs and the implications of this weekend and who controls their own destiny and things like that, because we were scratching our heads trying to find some matchups down through here, Devin.
Yeah, it's one of those slates that, you know, on the surface, you know, a lot of the protected rivalries, some of the old rivalries renewed. Obviously, Texas A&M is loaded with talent, but you look at some of these other games, I mean, Michigan, Ohio State's not quite, you know, what we've come to know over the last few years, Alabama, Auburn. So it's going to be slim pickings in terms of, like, head-to-head matchup between NFL draft prospects. Honestly, over the last month, there's been a ton. You know, as you start to get into the meat of your conference schedule and going head to head against some of the top prospects in your conference. But this week, not so much. I do want to say before we jump into it, of course, Ashton Jeanty facing Oregon State, you know, and a quote unquote power four team, even though they're not really a power team anymore. But is another team that obviously, you know, previously in a power five, but a lot of people have been kind of talking about, like, oh, he's doing this against Mountain West opponents. He did it against Oregon. He's probably going to do it against Oregon State. So I just want to give him a quick shout out.
Yeah, for sure. I feel so bad for that Oregon State program. Somehow Washington State survived not getting their entire roster ravaged. Oregon State was not as lucky.
Yeah.
Jonathan Smith dipped for Michigan State.
Aiden Charles, too.
Damian Martinez went to Miami. That entire roster. And you can't, again, you can't blame Jonathan Smith, right? Like, if you have the chance to coach in the Big Ten versus, like, it's not really like, oh, he's leaving that school, he's abandoning them. They're like, they don't have a conference. Yeah. He doesn't have any guaranteed future. They don't have a TV deal. They don't have anything. They're playing a Mountain West schedule. Like, of course, if he got offered a Power Four job, he was going to take it. Like, you can't blame him. Same with a guy like Damian Martinez, who went to Miami. Things like that. Like, I just feel bad for the program, and I think they're going to end up full-time relegated. I mean, they're kind of starting to build the Pac-12 up, I guess, a little bit, but it's not looking too good, to the point where Boise State is a 19-point favorite in this game.
Yeah.
Despite Oregon State having built, I mean, Jonathan Smith built that program up over the past few years, and just for that to happen because of the dismantling of the Pac-12 kind of sucks for that program for sure. But yeah, man, I want Boise State 100% to get that at-large bid simply so that I can get one more Power 4 opponent on Janty's tape, like one more Power 4 opponent on tape for Janty's profile. I mean, I already know like who he is. He's my third highest graded player in the class. So like, I know who Ashton Janty is. Fourth highest. He's in my top five, but I want to see it again. Like, he did it against the number one team in the nation. I want to see it again. Just one more time. I think the next game that we can maybe talk about is Friday night. And it feels weird to be talking about Utah UCF as a conference game, but that's what we're doing in the new Big 12 as well. But really the first big prospect versus prospect matchup here, and it's not even so much a one-on-one the way wide receiver, corner, offensive tackle, edge rusher is, but they're going to get a chance to square up every once in a while. And that's Utah linebacker Lander Barton and UCF running back RJ Harvey. RJ Harvey has built up quite the resume this season, man. Really quite the resume in the Big 12. And Barton is kind of a name that's kind of, he started out in a lot of top 30s. He's still in Dane Brugler's top 50. I haven't personally checked out any linebacker tape yet. Haven't gotten there. I will get there eventually. So I have no idea, but I do know he has back-to-back weeks with interceptions now. And I did, you know, charting Shador, see the one, and he rotated out and he roboted out, and he had a really good feel for a backside dig coming in behind him and made that pick, which is a pretty cerebral play for a linebacker to anticipate passing concept based on what's happening in his peripherals. So, I'm optimistic about him as a prospect, but then RJ Harvey, man. Yeah. That dude just drops 200. Feels like every other week. So, yeah. I'm excited about that matchup.
Yeah, it should be fun. You know, the bright spot for Utah hasn't been Lander Barton. I mean, he's been pretty consistent, pretty steady throughout the season, you know, getting to see some of the games. You know, I think I watched the Arizona-Utah game earlier this year, and then I just watched the Iowa State-Utah game, and he continuously made plays inside the box, outside the box, had a pick six against Iowa State as well, where he looked pretty athletic doing it. You know, he made a few people miss in the open field and got out of there. So speed is definitely apparent for him. And then also the instincts and the ball skills. I mean, that's everything you look for in kind of that modern linebacker role. So in a class that, you know, I'm starting to dive into linebacker class is not the greatest at the top. I think Lander Barton is going to be someone that sticks near the top once everyone gets around to watching him.
Yeah, linebackers are always tricky. There are people who really love to take shots on the athleticism, like the guys at the high-end athleticism. But then you look at the NFL, and there's just a ton of dudes who, they might not be the best athlete. And I'm not saying Lander Barton's not a good athlete, because I think he is. But they're fat. They play with fast eyes, and they're reactionary. And, like, Josie Jewell is the ultimate example of this. The dude ran, like, a 4.7 40-yard dash at the combine. And he continues to hang around because he plays with fast eyes. So, it's kind of like the running back position. I talked to Jordan Reed during that scouting series I did over the summer, and he's like, listen, man, you could be a 4.3 athlete, but if you don't have eyes, you're a 4.5 athlete. Your game speed's 4.5. And if you're a 4.5 athlete who's got great eyes, you're a 4.5 athlete. So I think linebacker's kind of the same way. Ohio State, Michigan, man, there's so much potential for head-to-head matchups that all dissolved. Will Johnson has not played in a month. He's not going to play in this game. I know they're trying to play some mind games. He's not playing this game. So Emeka Egbuka, Will Johnson, no head-to-head to watch there. The other one between potential first-round matchups or first-round prospects would have been Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant versus Donovan Jackson. Josh Simmons goes down at left tackle. Their backup left tackle goes down. Donovan Jackson kicks out to left tackle. So we won't. I mean, Mason Graham does play some edge reps. He'll play some five techs. So you might get one or two. But we're not going to see that matchup.
Yeah, Josiah Stewart and Derek Moore, they're good players, but they're not first-round potential. But we'll get to see some of that. But still, with Donovan Jackson, I mean, he's not even playing his natural position, let alone the positional play at the NFL level. So kind of take it with a grain of salt. You know, obviously the run game reps might be a little bit better barometer. He'll get a chance, probably a little bit more chance of blocking Mason Graham, but yeah, the head-to-head, you know, potential between him, Ken Grant, and Donovan Jackson. We lost that.
Lost a big time. Yeah. I think South Carolina Clemson is probably a game we'll spend more time talking about when we start talking about the bracket, because I think there are some pretty big implications in that game for the playoffs. Louisville, Kentucky. There's a fun one here. Ja'Cory Brooks, the Alabama transfer playing wide receiver at Louisville, has had some of the highest highs of any wide. Like, he had a track midseason where he did a 360 and found that football somehow down the sideline. So he's got some ball skills. He's got some open field burst and speed. Maxwell Hairston, Kentucky corner, a sleeper first round draft pick. By all accounts, I've heard it from scouts. I know Dana said it. I've heard it as well. Is that sleeper corner to potentially be a top 32 pick? And he's only been back for 2 weeks. He missed most of the season, came back limited against Murray State, came back full time last week against Texas. And I thought for as twitchy and as explosive as Isaiah Bond is, I thought he had some really awesome speed transitions to flip his hips, to stay with him, to track him down the field. He's going to get another opportunity to put another decent receiver on his resume here with Ja'Cory Brooks as well.
Yeah, it'll be kind of important for Harrison here, you know, to get some more reps on tape. You know, this will be their last game of the season. They're not bowl eligible. And unfortunately, he missed some really big games over that course of the stretch that he missed against some really good potential receivers. But yeah, it'll be important for him. He'll probably get an all-star game invite, probably go down there and try to boost his stock even more that way. So for him, it could be, you know, kind of that glass half full approach where, you know, his best football is ahead of him, and he'll get a chance to show it in some different environments.
He's one of those corners that has the quick twitch and the reactionary athleticism to really shine in like one-on-ones, which are drills that are meant to, they're completely designed against defensive backs. They're meant for wide receivers to win up the line. So, yeah. So I'm excited if he does get an invite to kind of see how he does in that kind of setting. All right. Scrolling down further through the slate here, man, boy. I mean, I'm kind of excited to watch Notre Dame versus USC. One, because USC is not afraid to push the ball vertically down the field. I mean, now that Miller Moss is in their quarterback, who by all accounts had an arm that is not capable of pushing the ball down the field, they might be a little bit better about it. But I'm more interested in kind of seeing how Xavier Watts looks, you know, if he is pulled in multiple directions deep down the field, if he's got multiple receivers kind of threatening his responsibility, how does he handle that? How does he flip his hips? How does he locate the ball in the air? Again, I don't think Xavier Watts is a spectacular athlete. I think he's probably an average plus athlete, but he's such an instinctual football player, man. Such an instinctual football player. So I think I'm interested in that game for that purpose as well. Yeah, Miami Syracuse. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Woody Marks as well.
That's true.
I think he has some nice skill, has a nice skill set, probably day three guy, but it'll be good to see him against that Notre Dame front seven as well. That's very young, and they're going to have some guys over the next couple of years as well.
Yes. Yes, they will. Notre Dame's got some interior guys. Riley Mills has some juice. Very, very strictly a power rusher, stiff as a board, but very strictly a power rusher from five tech, from three tech, can play a little bit of seven. But Jonah Monheim playing center now, has played left tackle for the previous years, now playing center. I still haven't loved his tape, even kicking inside.
I feel like he made himself a day three guy moving in the interior, but I still think he's probably a dev offensive lineman at best.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, his play strength was bad at left tackle. His play strength's bad trying to jump anchor interior offensive lineman getting into his chest. Miami Syracuse has all fun potential because Syracuse is off the walls, dude. Syracuse is off the walls. Kyle McCord might throw five touchdowns and four picks. And Cam Ward might do the same thing. He might throw three touchdowns, a pick, and fumble two footballs. So, like, this game, yeah, has some bizarre potential.
Honestly, it's a sleeper good game.
It is.
If you like offense, it's probably going to be 80 to 90 combined throws.
Yes.
Or at least Miami's dropbacks, is not I should say. I should say dropbacks, because you got to account for, obviously, Cam Ward's rushing ability. And Kyle McCord, he likes to take off now. So, mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yeah, where was that last year? But Miami's defense isn't very good. So this game is a sneaky sleeper game for Miami to not get caught like
they can't sleepwalk against Syracuse because they're scoring fast. And Aronde Gadsden, I think he's a guy who's probably a big slot in the NFL. He's not big enough to be a tight end, but he's had some impressive moments working down the seam and working in the middle of defenses. So now that he has a quarterback that can get him the ball consistently, you see some of that talent that people have been oozing about last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I'll be interested to see how Syracuse attacks Cam Ward. I think Louisville tried to just drop eight and be like, he'll run around and he'll do something. Georgia Tech kind of did the same thing. Very, very varying results against Louisville. He ripped them apart, even though they dropped eight and were like, no, he's going to make a decision that we don't need to put pressure on him. He'll just run around and make the decision himself. And he ripped them apart. Yeah. Georgia Tech, though, same thing. And he did not. So we'll see how they decide. Are they going to bring pressure? Are they going to drop eight? Because his numbers against pressure since entering ACC play are not great. I have a full write-up on Cam Ward on DraftOnDraft.football. A little plug there for the podcast as well, but a whole film room from using the Duke game where they blew him out in the second half, but I didn't think it was a particular stellar outing. So I'm interested to kind of see how Cam Ward can finish the season because I mean it's looking like they're going to grab SMU. I mean SMU has to beat Cal this week, obviously, but SMU's lost one game; it was to BYU. So who's in contention for? A Big 12 championship, there's tiebreakers are whack. Maybe not after dropping two in a row, but just some whack tiebreaker scenarios in the Big 12 to work through as well. But that's SMU's only loss. So Miami can't sleepwalk these next couple weeks for sure. Auburn, Alabama. I think what I'm most excited about this game is that neither team, well, I guess Alabama ranked 13 could still sneak into the back end of the playoffs, but neither team is playing for an SEC championship. This game is just going to be pure hate, no pressure. No pressure, pure hate. So I'm very excited for that. It might just be haymakers.
Also, think about last year's ending too. Uh-huh. Jalen Milroe I knew Isaiah Bond's gone now. But I mean that ending was. It felt like that was going to be the jump start for Jalen Milroe. It hasn't quite happened, but we'll see.
Yeah, Dalton and I are very firmly in the camp that Milroe needs to probably go back to school.
I agree.
I do know some scouts have him graded as a running back, and he would grade very high as a running back. I do know that. And that's not the stereotypical, like, oh, he can't play quarterback. He's a black mobile quarterback stereotype. Like, teams legitimately have him graded as a running back. And if you watch his tape, you can see why, because like, he's so patient. He's so twitchy. He's so explosive. He's 6'1" and 220 pounds. So like he's rocked up. Like, so that could be interesting too. Like, does he just punt on the quarterback thing? If he gets like, he could get a second round grade as a running back. If that happens, would he do it? I don't know. But ultimately I think he is in a camp to probably go back to school.
I would think so, especially just the way that, in their biggest matches this year, you know, minus the Georgia game, he just hasn't been able to push the ball consistently down the field, you know. So when you can't do that, you know, you become a little one-dimensional. The RPO game is not working as well. And then all of a sudden you're trying to do something you haven't been able to do, you know, throughout the game. So it felt like for them it's kind of compounded and you know, they just kind of like try to protect him. And it's just a weird dynamic, I would say. You would have thought with him, with Kalen Dolbert would have really opened up his ability, especially to stretch things vertically, but also like improve in some of the short area consistencies, and it just hasn't been that.
Yeah, it's truly a bizarre paradigm to watch that Georgia game in retrospect now. Like how good he was against the blitz, knew exactly where he was going with the football, how accurate he was. And then for three of his last five games, South Carolina, Tennessee, and then this past week against Oklahoma, for him to look like a legitimate undrafted free agent passer has been jarring. It's been bizarre. Like I don't get it. I don't get it. The next matchup head to head in this slate to probably talk about those in Arkansas, Missouri game. Where are you at with the Armon Membo position at the NFL level? Do you think he can hang at tackle, or do you think he's kicking inside? He needs to kick inside.
This is so hard because like how many people can we kick on the inside?
I know I want to kick every single tackle to guard. I do. I don't care. I want to kick them all to guard.
I kind of want to see more before I make that analysis, because I've seen about two games of him so far, and he seems like he can stick out at tackle, but we'll see. I mean, it's tough to say right now. I would say I would probably lean stick keeping him at tackle, but I think it'll come down to, you know, some of the measurables, some of the testing, and see kind of from that perspective. I mean, the baseline, I think you get a really good guard at the very least. But I think the laterals and agilities will kind of tell us a little bit more about whether he's going to stick out tackle or not.
I think I agree with that. On tape, I think he plays with a really good base, and he's very controlled. But the foot speed to me does seem a little, not even sluggish, but a little heavy. Which to me seems like, oh, if I could cut that set depth down just a little bit, like we're cooking, like nobody's getting through his chest, which makes me lean guard. But yeah, let's see. Let's let the process play out a little bit here and kind of see how it plays out. All right. Yeah,
he's going against Landon Jackson, who I think has had a solid year. You know, I thought he struggled against Texas a little bit. Texas's tackles, I didn't think he was as good using some of his length and trying to get around the corner. So I think you kind of see, like, still, like, you know, you understand, like, his size profile is very intriguing and what he can bring from the size perspective. But I still think there's some stiffness in his lower half that kind of prevents him from being that really, truly dynamic, you know, edge rusher. So I'm kind of in a camp, like, he's somewhere between, like, for me, like, somewhere between JTT and Jack Sawyer, where, like, you know what those guys are, but, like, can they take that next step? Can they, you know, be a little bit more counter heavy? I think with Landon, the counter's got to be a little bit quicker.
Yeah. I feel the exact same way about him as I do with Prince Umanmielen. And Umanmielen has picked it up quite a bit down the stretch, but, like, I've been waiting for 2 years for Umanmielen to just, like, take that next step. And it just seems like year after year, it's like, I mean, he's explosive. He's really athletic. He's got really good bend for his length. But it's like the hand thing. It's like he hasn't developed a pass rush plan. He hasn't developed a counter. And I'm waiting on it and waiting on it and waiting on it. So I think those two are very much in the same tier for me of pass rushers. And in this draft class, that might be good enough to go slots 20 through 45. Like, very much good enough to go 20 through 45. In fact, I think they probably both will go top 45 in April. But
yeah, I mean, Landon Jackson is like a perfect May Lions edge rusher. Like, he just makes sense there. He makes a lot of sense there.
He sure does. Landon does predominantly rush off of against left tackles off the right side, but he'll flip flop every once in a while as well. Let's jump to Oklahoma LSU. Talk a little bit about our Mason Thomas. Oklahoma has this habit of outputting these dynamic DPRs. Feels like every 3 years there's one, right? There's Ogbo Okoronkwo, then there's Nick Benito, and now there's our Mason Thomas, kind of the same mold. These guys aren't going to be guys who you want playing every single down, early downs against obvious situations. But these are guys that, like, when they have the opportunity, you can put them on the field in a role where you just let them pin their ears back and be free. They're really good football players, and there's a role for them at the NFL level. Like, Okoronkwo's with his, like, fourth different team on his fourth different contract. Nick Benito's playing out of his mind this year for the Denver Broncos. Like, and I think our Mason Thomas is in that same mold where, like, this guy is probably going to go round three, round four, and he's going to find a role at the NFL level, and he's just going to get contract after contract after contract.
Yeah, he's really come on, especially as of late. And obviously the Alabama game is really, you know, I would say most people's, you know, that don't follow a draft consistently is really his first exposure, just because Oklahoma just hasn't been great this year. But yeah, he's another mold DPR. You know, we have a kind of that bucket every year of guys that are probably going to be designated pass rushers, and they always have a chance to go top three rounds because teams are looking for that, you know, especially after the first round. You know, you're looking for those guys that can come in and make an immediate impact, you know, in situational settings. And I think he's set up to do that. You know, I don't think, you know, his length is necessarily all that, but the explosiveness, his ability to turn the corner, and just the pressure he puts on tackles, quickly, I think is going to be really, intriguing to NFL teams.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is a resume game. Last week was a resume game, although Alabama's right tackle is.
Yeah.
Sure, let's move on. But this week he's got Emory Jones, who, man, I was high on coming into the season because I saw the raw athletic traits and thought year three as a starter, he would take a step forward in the technical aspect of his game, and it hasn't happened to the point where I'm like, I wouldn't be shocked if Emory Jones goes back to school for a senior season, but he'll have a chance to stack another resume game here against Emory Jones and Will Campbell. And Will Campbell, if there's one thing that's given him fits, it has been bendier's explosive edge rushers off the outside shoulder. So, this is a game where R. Mason Thomas could really, really establish himself. So that's a really fun matchup to talk about. Washington, Oregon. Why don't you talk about Jonah Coleman and the Oregon linebackers here in this
game? Yeah, so with Jonah Coleman, I mean, he just feels like more of that old school back, just power guy, someone that, has some pretty good eyes, ability to get to the second level. Doesn't really have that extra gear to take off, but I really think he does a pretty good job of reading things, finding yards that may not necessarily be there. But Oregon's linebacker duo, I think Bossa, we kind of talked about it off air, but he's a really good athlete, someone that flies to the football. You said, first guy.
First team off the bus.
So he's definitely a guy that for sure. That I think, is going to be in that conversation, possibly a day three guy. But it's really their other linebacker for me that really has stood out this season. Pulling up his name real quick, but Bryce Betcher, number 28 for Oregon, has really good instincts, decent size. He's listed at 6'2", 225, so a little bit on the lighter end, but he does some really nice things getting underneath passes, being able to get into the passing lane. And you're going to see a lot of chances for those one-on-one settings, especially in the hole between him and Jonah Coleman, because Washington runs their offense through Coleman. So I think with Betcher, you're getting a guy that, I think could sneak in the end of day two, early day three, as a really good instinctual linebacker that's just straight up solid. I don't think he's necessarily the most athletically gifted or a guy that, is going to blow you away, measurable wise, but he's always in the right place at the right time. And has been a steady tackler for Oregon's defense.
Yeah. And Jonah Coleman is very fun, back. I think he probably goes back to school as well. Another candidate to go back to school, but this is certainly a resume game for a team that has had a rough season after playing in the national championship game a year ago.
That feels so far away, man.
It does feel so, especially that it feels like the transfer portal just like throws 1 year, 5 years in the past because the landscape just looks so different year in and year out. Texas A&M. This game, my goodness, are there matchups all over the field? This is the one game where I'm like, yes, let's talk about matchups. You've got the Texas A&M pass rushers, Nick Scorton, Shamar Stewart, against those tackles. We're talking about potential four first round picks. Again, we've said on the pod that we've heard that Scorton is probably going back to school again. He's 19. He's playing at his home state. He's back home. Like, he's probably just having the time of his life. Let him develop a little bit more. But we have Nick Scorton, Shamar Stewart, Cam Williams, Kelvin Banks. That's a heck of a matchup.
That's the one everyone's going to be running to the tape to, Sunday morning, because they're going to want to see – another big game, I would say, for both Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams. Obviously, the Georgia game didn't go super well for either guy. And, they have another crop of edge rushers that, probably collectively one of the better ones in the country. So it is two different styles, too. You got the longer arm, athletically twitched up Shamar Stewart versus Scarton that, or Scorton, I should say, didn't look great to start the season, but started to come on as seemingly getting into more of his game shape that we're used to seeing. So it's going to be kind of a clash of like pass rush plans, like differing pass rush plans, how guys handle it. Kelvin Banks Anchor is going to be tested quite a bit, I would say, especially on those speed to power conversions. And then Cam Williams, the ability to protect that outside shoulder and not let guys get into his chest. So it's going to be a fun game to see how those guys handle that diversity of pass rush styles and ultimately how they look anchoring against them, because they're going to on third and six, third and seven, they're going to pin their ears back and come after them. So,
yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it happened against LSU, and I mean, they ate up Will Campbell and Emory Jones in that second half of that game. And so I continue to have the hot take. I don't know if it's a hot take. I think it's probably a hot take based off of other things that I've seen, but like, I continue to think that Cam Williams has a very good chance to be the first offensive tackle off the board.
Yeah, because he's
the only one with an actual actual offensive tackle measurables and foot speed and tools. And so it's like, this is his first year as a starter. He's 21. Like, he's only gonna get better. He's 6'5", 330, and he moves like that, and he has that length. And like, I think the NFL is gonna love the kid. Again, who knows what his background's gonna come out, and he'll get questions at the combine. He'll go through all those cross checks at the combine when he's meeting with teams in the pre-draft process. But on tape and on paper, like, this is the one guy I have no questions about whether he's a tackle or a guard. No questions at all. That guy's a tackle through and through. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out for him. And this is a huge resume game because, as you said, the Georgia game was a little rough.
Yeah, I mean for both guys too, because it's like, you know, I thought Kellen Banks had his moments in that Georgia game. It wasn't all bad, you know, but just collectively, you know, just getting driven back into Quinn Ewers and just not being able to anchor consistently. I think, you know, obviously those edge rushers are going to see that and really test it. But I will say, you know, Kellen Banks is kind of rebounding. He's had a couple good games. He had a good performance against Landon Jackson a few weeks ago when Texas and Arkansas played. So, you know, I think Banks especially, you know, he's a guy that we'll see, you know, with the NFL things. I think some are kind of split guard versus tackle. So this is going to be another game to prove whether or not he can hang out at tackle.
Yeah, for sure. Another big thing is if Quinn Ewers will just step up in the pocket. I thought against Georgia, like, he just gave pass rushers excellent angles to him because he just sat back on his drop and didn't step up in the pocket at all. And that's really hard for pass rushers to fight off. Like, you can see Kelvin Banks getting visibly upset on one of those sacks near the end zone, near their own end zone, where he's like, why are you getting, like, you could see he's visibly upset because it's probably 5 or 6 seconds into the play. And Quinn Ewers is still eight yards off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, he's trying to spin out.
Yeah.
And he ran right into the pressure.
Yeah, and you can, like, that's the play I think about. Like, man, you can see Banks visibly upset. I think that's enough time spent on this slate. Let's talk about the bracket a little bit and how the committee aligned this. And I think they aligned it in a way where every team truly controls their own destiny at this point. Like, if all these teams went out, this is what we're looking at, and they all have pretty favorable matchups to do so. Miami's my wild card still. SMU a little bit too. You can make the case that if Miami beats SMU or SMU beats Miami in the ACC championship game, do both teams still deserve to get in or just the ACC winner? I think they probably still keep Miami in if that's just their second loss and it was in the ACC championship game. If it's SMU's second loss sitting as the 9 seed, probably not.
Right.
Man, they really hedged. They really hedged Alabama still here.
No, they did. You knew they would.
And I can't get there because Alabama's playing some really crappy football. Their losses have been awful.
They probably have arguably the second, third best win so far.
That's fair. About
Oregon beating Ohio State. I mean, they beat Georgia. And I mean, like, you know, Georgia lost to Ole Miss and lost pretty convincingly. So, like, I think that one is like kind of a grain of salt. Like, it's early in the year. Like, you kind of let a big lead, you know, dwindle. And really, since that point, Alabama has been the same, just frankly speaking. I mean, obviously, lost to Vanderbilt and a few of the other losses, but their wins haven't been super convincing either. So I'm surprised they even ranked them just outside of the playoff. So, guess, you know, they're similar losses between Clemson and Alabama to Georgia, you know, obviously. Mm-hmm. The similar game there. You know, Clemson's really only big game on their schedule. I get it. I get it.
Yeah. What really stinks is where they put South Carolina for me, because I think South Carolina's playing some really good football. And I know they lost head-to-heads to both Alabama, very closely to Alabama, and to Ole Miss, who is also ranked above South Carolina. I know they lost.
Were they without Sellers, though, for Ole Miss?
They were without Sellers for the Ole Miss game, yes. Yes, they were. But, I mean, they got absolutely screwed out of that LSU game.
They did.
They should have won that game very easily after that pick six got called. It was a two-score game late in the game if that pick six doesn't get called back for blocking the court, like legally blocking the quarterback, and you throw a flag for that. To hedge them behind Ole Miss and Alabama just because of the head-to-head feels rough, especially when Ole Miss's losses are really, really bad. Really bad losses.
Lucky.
I don't know how you even hedge Ole Miss like that.
Florida, too. Florida and Kentucky is a death sentence. They probably shouldn't make the playoff. They probably shouldn't.
No. And again, a lot of these teams control their own destiny. And somehow, despite Carson Beck's play, despite getting blown out by Alabama and losing to Ole Miss, Georgia's in the driver's seat to go back to the SEC championship game.
They actually talked about
Georgia being in a driver's seat, but
I was going to say they actually punched their ticket already. They're in.
They are, yeah. So they're in. The SEC makes no sense. They're after this year for Georgia to just waltz back in, which I've been very vocal that this is the worst offensive line and the worst set of skill players I have seen Georgia field in the last half decade.
It's pretty brutal. They don't have any separators on the outside. They don't really have a difference maker per se on their offensive
line. Oscar Delp was starting to turn on the past couple of weeks, but Oscar Delp was invisible for 10 games up to this point. Eight games up to this point. It's bizarre for them to just walk right back into the championship game like that. It's crazy. It's crazy.
After that Bama loss, you and especially after that Ole Miss loss, you thought, oh, it's over. But here they are.
Yeah, they are. And I need to look at the tiebreakers to see who they could potentially play still. But
yeah, I think if Texas beats Texas A&M, they're in. If Texas A&M wins, I think Texas A&M is in. So I think the winner of the Texas A&M game.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because you look at Texas A&M losses this year, they lost to, South Carolina, I think?
South Carolina.
And
they just lost bad. They just had a really bad loss, though. Who was that against? It was an ugly, ugly loss. They lost to South Carolina. Auburn.
Yeah.
They lost to Auburn. Unranked Auburn. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. South Carolina blew the doors off of Texas A&M.
Yep.
Blew the doors off. I just don't think – I mean, if they win that game against LSU, they're sitting as a 12 seed right now, a game that they got absolutely gypped out of. Again, they played the 12 seed Clemson. Alabama plays Auburn, not ranked. Ole Miss plays Mississippi State, the worst team in the SEC. Is that enough for the committee to say, if they beat Clemson, who is ranked 12, versus Alabama and Ole Miss beating unranked teams, is that enough for them to jump in those two schools? But I'll tell you right now, South Carolina is a team that I wouldn't want to play. They're a team I wouldn't want to play in the playoffs. Their defensive front seven is awesome. Nick Emory is awesome. Again, Lenore Sellers is playing pretty freaking good football right now. I think they're a well-coached team. I wouldn't want to play them if they snuck into the 11th seed. That would be Penn State in the scenario. They'd play Penn State. I think they could blow the doors off. I think they could beat Penn State. And then they'd waltz into Miami, and I think they could beat Miami. That's a team that I would not want to play in this scenario. I am hoping.
I mean, I think whoever gets that 12 seed or the higher seed, I mean, they're going to be dangerous just because they barely made it in, one. But two, the road there, I mean, or I guess the 11th seed, but the road there just, I mean, it looks pretty good. pretty good, at least the way it currently holds up.
Yeah, we are looking at a legitimate chance we're going to see Ohio State versus Oregon three times in one season. That's legitimately what we're looking at. I'm looking at the bracket. They're going to play in the big game. Looking at the bracket.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see Ohio State, Oregon three times this season.
Oh my God. There's going to be a lot of like talk around that Big Ten championship game. Should they just rest their players? Like, should they even roll out their
guys? I'd want the five seed. Like, is playing a first round against the 12 seed and having to play a first round less beneficial than playing Tennessee or Georgia in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But also, like, the draw. Like, if you get a South Carolina, what if you get, you know, a Bama, even though, like, Bama is not what they are or used to be. But, like, that's kind of Ryan Day's boogeyman, you know, like.
It kind of is. But in this scenario, like, those are the two best teams in the conference, in the nation. They're going to be the one seed and the five seed.
Oh,
like, I don't see any other way where Ohio State falls further than the five seed, and there's no way Oregon falls any further than the five seed. Another loss to Oregon would not drop Ohio State beyond the five seed. It just would.
Unless it's it won't be.
One seed and five seed is going to be Ohio State or Oregon. I would rather have the five seed and play the Big Ten, the Big 12 champion, and Boise State than have to have a bye and play
an
SEC at large like team.
Absolutely.
So I think this is where the playoff committee needs to fix this and say every conference champion, every P4 conference champion should get in, but the four highest seeded conference champions shouldn't have top four seeds. Like, the seeding should be based on ranking. Like, because this makes the five seed the best place to be in the bracket. It's better than having the one seed. So I don't know, man. But looking through all the scenarios, I'm praying for South Carolina to get a chance to continue their run, because they're playing some really good football.
I think for them, what needs to happen is A&M probably needs to beat Texas.
Mm-hmm. But does Texas fall all of the out?
Yeah. Yeah, then they play Georgia in a SEC title game. They get blown out, or just, you know, or not even blown out, but make it a tight game, relatively tight game.
Mm-hmm.
Then South Carolina's win over A&M looks better. You know, just everything they've been able to put on the table, where Sellers has actually played, you know, needs to, you know, will just look better in general. So. Mm-hmm. I think they're in a scenario where the teams that beat them probably also need to win, you know, just even if it's like this week, they just need to win. Like, their losses need to be, I feel like, even more like legitimate, mm-hmm. you know, more legitimate. But we'll see. I mean, there's SEC is pretty kind of dry. I mean, the Big 12 is the one that is going to be kind of like, all right, like, who's going to be in it? So here are the scenarios. Nine teams can are in contention for the Big 12 championship game, which is insane. Four teams with two conference losses, and then five teams with three losses. But Arizona State, Iowa State control their destiny if they both win their game, final games, they play each other. But if there's two teams tie at 7-2 after Saturday, those teams will qualify for the Big 12 championship game. There's a 4-team tie, Arizona State and Iowa State will play. If there's a 3-team tie, there's like six other different scenarios that can happen. So, like, basically, Arizona State, Iowa State, they handle their business, they're in. Afterwards, that's where it gets a little hectic.
Yeah, I'm going to have to read this because I'm looking at it and my mind is exploding.
Yeah, it's like, what do you mean? Four-way ties, three-way ties. Like, it's insane. But
Texas,
but, all right,
Texas Tech could get in somehow.
Yeah, so all right. So here is here are the scenarios. So a 3-team tie. If Colorado loses, this will be Arizona State, Iowa State. Arizona State loses, as Iowa State, BYU. And then Iowa State loss, it will be Arizona State and BYU.
Let's so Colorado needs a lot of help.
Yeah. So for Colorado to get in, they need a BYU loss, a Texas Tech win, a Baylor win, and a Cincinnati win. Or they need a BYU loss, Texas Tech win, Baylor loss, or Cincinnati loss. So they need help from Baylor and Cincinnati. they both need to either win or both lose. And then Texas Tech and BYU, BYU needs to lose, Texas Tech needs to win. So yeah, they need a lot of help to get in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also like wondering for Indiana's sake, if Clemson beats South Carolina, are they gonna kick Indiana out?
I think they're kind of set enough for them to get kicked out.
I think so.
Because them going down to 10, like, I get it. You know, it wasn't super competitive game against Ohio State, but also, like,
they don't have the horses, man. I kind of get
don't.
It.
They I kind of get it. I get it. But also, like, it's kind of sucks.
It does suck, for sure. They're definitely hedging for Clemson to sneak in here, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they're basically Florida State of last year. They're not even getting a chance to compete in the Big Ten championship game because Ohio State's not losing to Michigan this year. And that was pretty much it. That was their one game that could get them in or not. And yeah, it pretty rough draw for them. They're probably gonna be out.
Yeah. That's brutal. That's brutal. All right, man. I think that is a lot of discourse. That is a lot of discourse.
Yeah. You could spend like an hour on this because it just like not only are you like thinking about like the potential matches, but like, all right, you know, does this team want to win this week? Do they want – I mean, there are just so much that goes into that. Like on the surface, it's exciting, but like you really dig into it. It's like it's kind of some sicko behavior going on right here.
Uh-huh. Like, it is for sure.
Like Clemson, Alabama, like it almost feels like the start of the first playoff where like you just knew they want to get those certain teams in so they're going to rank them just outside. Know there's going to be some movement towards the bottom of it and mm-hmm. they're going to be right there to justify it. But yeah, we'll see. I mean,
I think the biggest question mark for me would be, I think Miami still gets in even if they lose in the ACC championship game. If that's their second loss and it's the ACC championship game, I still think they get in at like the 11th seed, 10 seed, 11th seed. If SMU loses in the ACC championship game, they don't get in.
Yeah. Especially if BYU doesn't make the Big 12 championship game, which sounds like they probably won't.
Yeah. So that's a wild card there for me. But again, Indiana's playing Purdue, and that is not a resume game at all. That team is... Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be 1-11. I mean,
yeah.
And it just, they have not been competitive at all.
I mean, Tennessee's sitting pretty here. All you just got to go out and beat Vanderbilt and you're in. No pressure about playing in a conference championship game.
But Vanderbilt.
Notre Dame's the same way. Notre Dame isn't even a conference. So just go take care of business. You're good to go.
That Vanderbilt game is dangerous, though, man.
They are.
Nothing to lose. They already done it like twice this year. Like mm-hmm. it's the third time, you know.
Dude, I hope Pavia gets that waiver. I want to see him another year. I want him to play another year. But all right, man, that's a lot of discourse. Happy Thanksgiving as well to you and your family.
Yes, yeah, same.
Until next time, man. I think that's a healthy episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Do you have anything to add before we get out of here?
No, man, just appreciate the opportunity. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. You know, hope everyone enjoys their time with their family and loved ones and excited for this time of year. You know, we're like, by the time this comes out, we'll be about 9 days away from learning the playoff. So that's going to be exciting. You know, obviously the full season's starting to wind down. So, yeah, we're full steam ahead, man. And as always, I appreciate you having me on. You know, you and Dalton have been doing some great stuff with this podcast, been able to listen and listen to what you guys are saying, interacting with you guys. And you guys both do quality work. I'm glad that you guys connected to be able to do this podcast. And as always, appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Devin. Anytime. But until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft podcast.